We had some technical difficulties. Guess we're trying to work through those. So let's try this one more time. I'm not sure how much you heard from the first the false start, but again, we're here. It's been a minute since we've been connected with the listeners and the viewers, and I'm excited and happy to be back in contact with you. Unfortunately, a couple of days ago, there was a power outage here at the station, and so evidently there are still some bugs in the system associated with that power outage, and we are working through those items and attempt to get the show on the road. So I apologize if you weren't able to hear us before, or you did hear us and then this is a repeat, but hopefully we're back online for good now and we will keep moving forward. So thanks again for all the listeners and the viewers that commented during the absence. I think it's been about 3 weeks now that we weren't able to be in contact. But again, Muskegon Heights is moving forward and things are continuing to push in a positive direction. And so we're excited about all of that. And we're going to talk a little bit about that in this session. And if there are any questions, please feel free to log on and hit us with questions. And hopefully I can explain those things that are part of what city management is all about and what we're trying to do as we move forward with the Muskegon Heights and reaching new heights. So I know everybody, or at least I have received numerous phone calls about the school system. And whereas the school system in Muskegon Heights is a separate entity, the city management and the local government is separate from that. And we're only in a position to work with, to collaborate, to cooperate, to encourage, to influence. But it is something separate. And a lot of folks want to talk about that. And it is important to the city. And that's part of the dissertation that I'm working on, which is that connectivity between local schools and the connectivity between local government. And so those are two important entities to any community that you will come across, where you look at the families that are residents of the community, the businesses that are part of the community, all the stakeholders of the community, and essentially they're all being served by two major entities. I argue that there's a total of six altogether, but the two major ones, at least tax-funded ones, are the school district and local government. And so the way they work together or don't work together is really important to the individual families that they serve. The school district serves the same families, the same stakeholders. The local government serves the same families, the same stakeholders. And so we should be doing it in collaboration in such a way that the things that we do leverages the input and expenditures and the allocation of one entity to the other. The school district, their investments coincide with the investments of the local government and vice versa. But having said that, I would like to pivot and talk about what I know from the standpoint of local government is important and critical to both the school district and local government, and that is the debt. Currently, the debt stands at $34.8 million, and this was as of the 2020 documentation that I have, $34.8 million. That was financed out to 2042 or 43, if I'm not mistaken. And if you go out that far, it becomes $43.7 million. $43.7 million worth of debt. Now, the way that the emergency manager is structured, from what I understand, and my limited understanding, having been a school superintendent in the past, but my limited understanding says that the school district is structured in such a way that the charter school entity can't operate with the funding school model of the state, the foundational funding model, whereas the debt is still part of what the elected school district is responsible for paying over the years. That debt is a combination of operation debt and facility debt. Those two were put together and funded or refinanced through bonds and such. And that's how you come up with the $34 million and the $43 million if you take it out over time. what's important to know about that is that there are several school districts in the state of Michigan who, during deficits with the state legislature, or I should say a lack of surplus like we have now, that were fortunate enough in order to secure the waiver of their debt. And I don't know, or I can't see from my perspective as a city manager, in conjunction with the mayor and council, why this school district, the city of Muskegon Heights, is any different, why they would not be eligible for the same debt forgiveness, that other school districts were fortunate enough to have. Why is that important? Well, from the standpoint of the city of Muskegon Heights, it's important because our residents and our businesses are footing the bill for that school debt. And so if we are able to forgive that debt, then that is a burden that they would not have to bear. The economic development of local government depends on how much we are taxing our businesses and how much we are taxing our residents. And that together, it decides when somebody moves to Muskegon Heights, what they will pay for that resident. So the point of intersection comes in many places, but it cannot be denied that it comes with regard to the school debt. That school debt is a burden that everybody shares, whether they live in Muskegon Heights, or they work in Muskegon Heights, or they are stakeholders of Muskegon Heights as commercial businesses or industry. That is the point of intersection. And so we have to be concerned about that school debt. Now, if that school debt can be waived, and I believe it can, we have a surplus. What does that mean? From my limited understanding and the evidence and the documentation that has come to me, that means that the school district would have the opportunity to choose whether they want to continue in their current format or if they want to pursue the traditional format. I am completely in favor of the school district having that choice and the people of Muskegon Heights coming together and making that choice. But from what I understand, that choice cannot be made as long as the debt sits on the shoulders of our children, our students, and our community. So when I talk about pivoting, what I talk about pivoting to is how can we address that $43.7 million? And I think you will continue to hear some of the elected officials talk about, yes, there are a number of issues that need to be dealt with our school district. There are a number of things that need to be discussed and a number of things that need to be changed. That is something that goes without saying. But the choice of whether you want to continue as a charter district or if you want to pivot and become a traditional school district will not happen as long as that debt is there. As long as that debt is there, we cannot have economic development in our community. I mean, we can have it, but it's going to be limited. It's going to be limited by the massive number of mills that exist to pay off that debt. If that debt is waived, then we can look at economic development. And what does it mean by economic development? Well, if we assume that the school district debt occupies 25 mills, and let's, for hypothetical purposes, let's talk about 25 mills. What does that 25 mills look like? Well, if we wipe out the debt, then that 25 mills that goes to pay off that debt goes away. What can we potentially use that money for? Well, let's just look at 12 mills, 12 and a half. That's half of that 25 mills. Right now, in order for us to pave a road, we assess a local millage rate for streets of 4 mills. And that 4 mills nets us approximately $360,000. You've heard me talk about that before. That's nothing new. That $360,000 is nothing compared to the massive amount of road maintenance and repair and reconstruction that is required. If you came to our council meetings about three or four sessions ago, you heard a presentation by Metro Consulting Associates. It says, here is the plan to repave our streets over the next 20 years. And that is $110 million. Now, of course, if we want to throw more money at it, we can shorten that time frame if we want to spend more per year. But what you need to understand from that whole presentation, if you look at how much we spent on the last road reconstruction, which was about 0.5 miles, and that cost us $770,000. $770,000. Right now, $360,000 will get us a half to 0.3 miles of road reconstruction. That $360,000 is a drop in the bucket. And in order to do half a mile, it costs us $770,000. And that's taking the road millage of 4 mils each year for 2 years to cover that $770,000. So if we had 12 and a half mils, we could take that 4 mils and that multiply that times 3. 4 times 3 equals 12. So we're just rounding. We're talking about taking that 4 mils and multiplying it times 3. We would have 3 times as much funding as we currently have. So right now we're getting $360,000, and that would give us close to $1.4 million worth of funding if we had those 12 and a half mils. And that's just half of the 25 that's used for school debt. And so what could we use that 12 and a half mils or that 1.4 million? We could use it to begin to pave roads, starting around the schools and emanating out from the schools. But right now we're only able to earn $360,000. We need to earn more if we're going to pave more. And I know our citizens are crying about the need for us to be able to pave more to address what hasn't been done in the last 30 years, what hasn't been accomplished, what hasn't been maintained, what hasn't been rebuilt. All of that work that should have been done over the last 30 years is now coming to a head today, and we need to address it. Where are the funds going to come from to address it? So I would suggest, as we pivot and say, the school district needs to have its debt eliminated so it can have that choice. But also, if we take half, just half of the amount that we are spending to pay school debt, that school debt is gone, that half, just half of it, could be used to pave our streets. If you look at some of our sister communities, like down south, St. Joe's, in that area, you look at what Benton Harbor has done in terms of paving the streets and finding the funds to be able to do that, because they didn't have to focus it on school debt and paying off the schools. That money can be used for us to repave our streets. Now, it wouldn't be an instant fix, but it would be 3 times as much as what we're spending now that we could then focus on repaving the roads. And that means economic development. That means when somebody goes to buy a house on a road that has been repaved, that house has more value. You know, I would argue that those houses have value today. And that's intrinsic. You can look at the numbers over the last 3 years and you can see the property values in Muskegon Heights have been escalating every year for the last 3 years. And that is important because we know the value of our property in this city is continuing to go up. But just think how much it could go up more if we were able to pave the streets on top of that. It's going up without the streets being paved. If we were able to pave the streets on top of that, the values would go up. And if the values went up, how does that help us? Right now, when we assess our millage to pay for the operating expenses and the services that the city provides to the community, we assess that based on the existing property values. If those property values go up, so does the amount that we are able to earn from property taxes. That increases along with it. We rebuild our tax space, and therefore we can provide better and more services to our community. Right now, we're in a position where we can't fire any more police officers or firefighters. And why would we want to do that? Except the fact that we have to figure out how we can either increase revenue or cut expenses. We're at the bare minimum as it is now. We're at the bare minimum with law and fire and public works and the other areas that are part of our general fund. If we try to cut any of that, then we're cutting into services. And our services are already challenged here in our city. So really, our focus has to be on how we can generate more revenue. And that revenue is going to come from filling in our tax base. And that's why you've heard me talk over and over again about new houses. And new houses are a critical part of us being able to fill in and create a tax base. But until the school district is able to get that debt forgiven, we're not going to have the maximum amount of impact on our property values due to our economic development input and investment of being able to do the roads and do the houses. It's not enough to just to do one without the other. We have to do both together. And so as much as we want to talk about what's going on with our school district, which is important, by no means, don't get me wrong, by any means, it is important. But I want us to also focus on the big picture. And the big picture is we have to do something about this debt. This debt is strangling not only our school district, but it also is a heavy load on our local government. And if you want our local government to be able to provide better services, that's clean parks, that's parks with fencing, that's parks with infrastructure, that's parks with gates and lights and cameras and room to play and enjoy the green space, all of that does not happen. That's Parks and Rec's programming, which was abolished several years ago. It's bringing back all those things so that we in our community can enjoy the green spaces that we have. Recreation is a critical and important part of everything that we do as a community and the services that we offer. And so if we want those types of things, if we want to have a clean space with no blight, where we can eliminate blight by cleaning it up, by keeping the lots cut, and either they're going to be cut or they're going to be used to build houses. It's got to be one or the other, but they shouldn't just sit blighted and open and available and vulnerable for dumping. That's not the answer. If we want to be able to provide more services, we have to be able to fund the DPW, our public works department. We have to be able to hire the people that the DPW department needs in order to provide services. It was 2008, that time frame, that we went from somewhere in the neighborhood of 30 public works employees down to what we have now, which is barely 12. That is a horrendous cut in services that we are in a position to be able to provide and offer. So the city of Muskegon Heights, the city did not shrink. It's still just under 4 square miles. And our public works department is struggling every day to be able to service that 4 square miles in the way that this city deserves. Are we in a position to cut any of that? No, we're not. And so you look at police and fire and public works and the other services that are offered within City Hall, like finance and cash receiving and the water filtration plant and the water that we're able to provide as the crown jewel of our community and our environment. None of that is in a position to be able to take a reduction or a cut unless you want all of those services to go away. Now, granted, like I said, $110 million to pave our streets. We could shut down city government today, and that would net us somewhere in the neighborhood of $10 million. And at $10 million spent only for fixing our roads, only for paving the streets and reconstructing, and you spread that over 11 years, that's $10 million a year for 11 years to repave all the roads. And if we did that, shut down everything that we did and only focused on paving the roads, you would have no services whatsoever. No police, no fire, no public works, no finance, none of that. And that would be 11 years. That's unacceptable. So what I believe we have to focus on is revenue. And until we're able to get the folks that are associated with our school district to see that we need to get rid of that $43.7 million worth of debt, it's going to be difficult for us to continue to move forward. Now, having said all that, as we switch to talking about the city, what we have been able to do, and we've talked on these shows because I think it's important for all of us to be aware of where we were, where we are, and where we're going. We have to talk about the fact that we've raised almost $30 million, three times what our annual budget is in revenue associated with grants and free money. And that's how we've been able to claw our way out of the problems and difficulties that we've had, despite the fact that we don't have any money coming in. We don't have a surplus. Some of our neighboring communities are fortunate enough to be operating with the surplus. Muskegon Heights, we don't have a surplus. We do not have a surplus. So how are we able to move forward? How are we able to make gains, even though we don't have any additional funding coming in? That's the question. And fortunately, there are those folks outside of the city of Muskegon Heights who have been leaning in, who see, as we continue to put out grant applications and requests for funding to do things that otherwise we would have been able to do if we had the financing and funding, they have seen that we are moving and that we need the help in order to address the difficulties of not having a surplus. And so they've been willing to be to fund us to do some of these things that need to be done without any money coming in and no money down. And so because of that, we've been able to move forward. We've been able to get the lights back on downtown. We've been able to create a program for the reserve officers. I mean, the many things that I can go on and go on and go on and talk about that we have talked about on the show that, you know, if you looked at Muskegon Heights today, you might not think about, well, 2.5 years ago, when I rode downtown, none of those lights were on. I couldn't see any. It was all dark. Not only was it the decorative lights that belonged to the city of Muskegon Heights, but it was also the street lights as well. And the collaborative effort to repeatedly go after Consumers Electric so that they would come out and fix those lights, the collaborative effort to fix our street lights, that's been money that has come in that we did not anticipate because we did not know that we were going to be able to get grants, although we kept applying for them and we kept working to achieve them. $30 million over two years, that's a lot. And a lot has been done. For the first time, we came together and we were able to put together a visioning plan that was grant funded. Thank you to the Community Foundation. Thank you to Greater Muskegon Economic Development for coming together to help us create a vision. I mean, that's usually the first step. That's usually the first step, creating a vision, because there's so many things when I got here to Muskegon Heights that were being done, that were fantastic. People were doing stuff here and there and all over the community in Muskegon Heights. But the problem was you couldn't see the evidence of it a year later. That was the difficulty. And so how do we take all that positive energy and the things that people were donating, the things that people were taking out of the goodness of their own heart to pay? How do we take all of that stuff and focus it on positive direction? And that usually starts with a vision plan. And fortunately, the Community Foundation and GMED saw that was a need and they funded it. And we were able to go out to the community and do charrettes and talk about what is the plan and what do we want to see in the next 5 to 10 years our community to look like. And that's how we got our vision plan. Now, their vision plan was focused on our downtown area, which is important, but it is part of a larger picture of where we want our community to go as Muskegon Heights. And that larger picture is, yes, we can make our downtown a destination. And that's what we're trying to do. That's what we're working towards. And we're getting grant funding to do that. And I'm thankful to the EPA for their funding for that. I'm thankful for Eagle for their funding of the development project that is on the corner of Peck and Sherman. All these are pieces of bringing back our downtown and making our downtown a destination. But it's not just about making it a destination. it's about bringing the businesses with it. Now, what we discovered through the pandemic is that we have a treasure trove of entrepreneurs in Muskegonites. So how do we bring those entrepreneurs out of the backyards and out of the basement and out of the dining room into being able to purchase and spend money and rent and lease our downtown businesses? That's a challenge. But if we have a destination downtown for people to come, for families to come and enjoy, then that's going to draw the businesses. And that's part of the visioning plan, was not just about our downtown, but it was about drawing the businesses back. That's why we put in the request for the $8 million to pave Broadway. That's our downtown corridor. That's our Main Street. We're one of the few communities in the lakeshore, on the lakeshore, that has an intact downtown. So we need to leverage that. We need to take advantage of it. And we need to make sure that that is the crown jewel of the work that we do. And that's why we put in that grant request for the $8 million to pave from end to end on Broadway. That, in addition to the streetscapes, that's new lights, new sidewalks. That's also a new streetscapes, which was the facades of the businesses. That is what we're expecting to bring along with creating that destination. The businesses, the destination. And if we bring businesses at the same time that we are bringing to bear new housing, so it's not just about the draw downtown, it's not just about the businesses, but it's about the housing. People want to live in communities where they have housing options and opportunities and choices at the same time that they have the ability to go downtown and shop. That is why we are focusing on trying to create environments in our downtown business district where people can come and shop and enjoy, not only to spend time, but to earn and learn. And that's what our downtown is focused on, in conjunction with bringing in new housing. So you've got downtown, you've got housing, and then it leaves us our industrial park. We're fortunate enough to have grants, again, to look at our industrial parks, to revamp our industrial parks, to be able to attract the type of industry to our industrial parks that's looking for water, that's looking for high tech. All of those things are part of what we are attempting to do through grant funding, again, for industrial parks. We have an industrial park on the east side and industrial park on the west side. You take that in conjunction with new housing, because when you bring in business, what do they want? They want a place for the people who are going to work at that business, who are part of that new business, to live. So they have housing where they can purchase and buy to live or rent, preferably to buy, until they are situated with their new industry in either the east side or the west side, get housing, industry, and then you have the shops to serve them. The shops that have theaters or restaurants or bars or those types of shops all in our downtown area. And that is going to be something that comes as a result of our downtown location, the destination. And then you've got our parks, Mona Lake Park. Mona Lake Park should be a destination. It absolutely should. Why? Right on the water. This is our waterfront community. And I've heard talk about the land to the left and the land to the right. I know what we have now is waterfront property that we are not taking advantage of. We have a pavilion that's sitting there on the water that could be, that should be our moneymaker. We have the ability to have conferences, to have festivals at that property. So that should be our second destination for the type of activities like festivals. You've got hotels right across the street that could be part of festival packages, where people come and say for a weekend, and during that weekend, they enjoy the waterfront festivals at Mona Lake. That is one of our most valuable pieces of property that we need to leverage and take advantage of. For the first time, the lights are now on down at Mona Lake. Now, not all of them, but the majority of them are on. And that is something that hasn't happened in a number of years. We need to build on that and continue through grant funding to be able to bring to bear at Mona Lake Park all of the resources and opportunities associated with having that green space right on the water. And that's why we've gone out for grants for DNR and Eagle to be able to fund putting a pavilion down there to put boats in the water so that they can take advantage of visiting the pavilion. We want a marina. We want parking. We want to reconfigure the use of this, the green space, whether it be baseball fields, softball fields, or soccer fields, whatever it takes that serves our community. That's what we want in that space. And it could be residential. We don't have waterfront residential property, so why are we not pursuing that? These are the things that we can have happen as a result of the visioning plan that gets us started and gets us jumpstarted. Now, there was a question about DPW. The question was, how can we create more jobs for our DPW crew? The key issue isn't so much creating more jobs. The key issue is creating the revenue that allows us to pay for it. And that's our challenge. And our revenue, going back again, comes from being able to recreate, reestablish our tax base. The jobs are there. The need is there. And hopefully the need will go down as people change their behavior. I hate the fact that that we have folks. Well, I love the fact that we have folks that visit and patronize our downtown businesses. I mean, that's awesome. What I hate about that, though, is that some of our residents or some of those that patronize those businesses feel that it's okay to dump their food, their excess cartridges, cases, whatever it may be, that they don't want out their doors of their vehicles onto the ground. And then our public works has to come behind it and clean that up. We want to have our downtown as nice and neat and clean as possible. So to the extent that we can change the behavior and limit the amount that people throw out instead of putting it in a trash can that we can then dump, we want to be able to change that behavior. But the jobs are there. And so, yes, the pavilion has been empty for, some people tell me, and this is long before I got here, some people tell me for 50 years. I don't know that it was 50 years. I don't know that it was 30 years, but I know that it wasn't less than 30 years. And so that building, which has beautiful bones, which has all the structure that that is needed to be a sturdy force to go on for years and years and years, has just been sitting there unused. That is a travesty. It is tragic. It is a travesty of justice that that building right on the water is sitting there empty and not being used. You go down to Pierre Marquette and you see the similar facility on the beach that is owned by the city called The Deck. And you see they're making millions of dollars hand over fist by taking advantage of just the sand that is out there. And they're not even waterfront. The pavilion on the beach is waterfront. So what could we do similar to that to be able to take advantage of that opportunity? That is a question that we have to ask ourselves, because it is a jewel that has been sitting and unused, and we have to leverage the opportunity to take advantage of bringing people into our community. And if it's not even bringing people into our community, the people that are in the community should have the opportunity to enjoy those things. Mona Lake Park, Johnny O'Harris Park, 8th Street Park, all of those parks should be spaces that we can enjoy while we live, work, and play in Muskegon Heights. Why not? Why not the city of Muskegon Heights? Why not? All the opportunity is there. Vincent also says that Mona Lake is the most beautiful lakefront park in Muskegon. You've heard me say it once, and I'll say it again because it bears the need to be said. When I first came to the city of Muskegon Heights, I looked at Muskegon Heights and Mona Lake, and I said, why can't we do fireworks over the water? I mean, why haven't we? And I did not know that we had never done a professional fireworks show before. But that was one of the first things that we were able to do as part of the very first Juneteenth celebration as a holiday. And I'm thankful to Ms. Ross for the work that she did and helping that make that happen, that we were able to have our very first fireworks show over the water. And we see the value of it, even though there is an expense associated with it. People are willing to donate money to be part of something bigger than themselves. And that's what we learned about the first Juneteenth celebration down at Mona Lake Park with the fireworks show. And then the next year we come back and we increase the visitorship for the lake during that period of time by tenfold. And so we have the second fireworks show, which is just as good as the first one, if not better, because it was done to music. This is the beauty of the city of Mohegan Heights. One of the beauties of it, that beautiful down waterfront lake property. And some people go down there and enjoy it during the week, enjoy it during the sunshine. But that's great. But we need to take it, you know, not to the next level, five more levels, and hold festival after festival after festival. Every weekend, something should be going on down there during the summer months for us to take advantage of the beauty of that park. And there's no reason why we can't do that as the city of Mohegan Heights. So I want you to look at that vision plan. The architects are steadily working on putting together drawings and construction documents for our downtown area, but that is just the tip of the iceberg. It is one piece of a bigger puzzle, attracting people to make our downtown a destination. It's just one piece of it. The housing, which was just kicked off on the corner of Ray Street and Delano, and hopefully that'll be 30, if not 100, maybe 200 homes when it's all said and done. The house that was developed in conjunction with, that is being developed in conjunction with CTE, Career Technical Education, on the corner of Jarman and Hume. You know, that's a beautiful thing, because we need to be able to develop the skilled trades in our community, so that as we build our community, the people that are doing the building are people from our community. And the CTE collaboration with the Lake Hawks in Flight allows us to begin that process. And hopefully that process will continue beyond just this first home to multiple homes. But having us be a part of that development process means that some of the people that are building homes will be able to buy those homes that they're building themselves. And the fact that we are beginning a policy the last 3 years that says that any property that comes available, we have the first right of refusal, and the city's going to exercise that. That is huge. Other communities across the state and across the country are looking at how they can do the same thing that we're doing. And that is, that property comes up to the land bank. We say as a city, we want that property. And then we turn around and we auction that property off to people who live in our community. The first right goes to people who live or businesses in our community for the purpose of building houses or rehabbing houses that can be lived in as owner-occupied homes. And what does that do for us? That transitions people from renting to home ownership. And that's an important part of fighting the negative aspects of gentrification, or as I call it, gentrification displacement. We don't want to displace anybody who is part of the culture and the fabric of Mohegan Heights. So we want to figure out a way how we can transition them from being renters to being owners. That's important to maintain the fiber, but it's also important because it allows us to create generational wealth and intergenerational wealth. And I've said it before, I'll say it again, the single most factor that is involved in the transition of wealth from one generation to the next is the ownership of property. The single most significant factor that separates the minority community from the non-minority community is the ability to accumulate wealth, right? Not to have income, but to have wealth. And what separates those two, the minority community from the non-minority community, is the ownership of land. So when we transition people from renting to owning, we are not only maintaining the fiber of our community, but we're also creating the opportunity for generational wealth that wasn't there before, and intergenerational wealth going forward. And that's a huge part of what's important to this community. And it would not have started unless we as a community, the mayor and the council, had decided that they were ready to take ownership of the property that comes available due to tax foreclosure in Muskegon Heights. For many years prior to us, that wasn't the case. We felt we didn't have the funds in order to maintain it. But now we discover and we understand that that is not part of the calculus. If we take that property as our first right of refusal and make it available to our people, then we are controlling our own destiny. And that is an important aspect of what we're doing. And then let's talk about the vehicles. We've had old vehicles in Muskegon Heights for years and years and years and years. Some of our vehicles are 24 years old. The collaboration with Enterprise Fleet Management is now an opportunity for us to take the money that we're putting into repairing these old vehicles, the money that we're putting into putting gas and fuel in these vehicles that are not gas efficient. We're going to stop that. We're going to transition away from these old vehicles. We're going to put them out to sale, to salvage. So all those things that we were spending money on with our fleet, we're going to stop doing that because that we were spending more money than we had to if the vehicles had been newer. So we're going to gradually go through the process of refreshing our fleet with new vehicles that we can then keep for 4, maybe 3 years and then sell them for less than it cost us if we were maintaining these old vehicles for 25 years. And it is just a numbers equation. If we look at the amount of money we were spending in total for old vehicles that we've had for 20 some odd years, 10, 9, 8 years, and we push that into new vehicles that we have for 5 years at the max, we can maintain a whole fleet that's 5 years old, from 1 to 5 years old, for less cost than we maintain a fleet that was from, you know, from 7 years old to 24 years old. And so just understanding the raw numbers and the opportunity for us to have newer vehicles that are more fuel efficient, that are more effective and are able to allow us to do our job better. You know, it's not just about effective, but they have to be efficient. That is important. And so you will see out on the lawn of City Hall now, the first two new vehicles that are part of that fleet transition. Those vehicles are going to be sent out to be used. And you will see the new vehicles that will be here next week as part of that whole refreshment that will go to out to be used as well. So in the last 3 weeks, we're talking about a total of 5 vehicles out of all the vehicles that we have that are part of that transition over the next 6 to 12 months of refreshing all of our old vehicles. So that is a tremendous change. That is what we're talking about. But all of that starts with the vision and our vision plan. And we're able to extend to all these other things because of that vision plan. Because of that vision plan, people are outside our community are able to lean in. We're able to go after grant funding. We're able to go after free money that wasn't there before, donations that wasn't there before. That's the start of Rowan Park. That $250,000 comes from a vision plan that comes from Consumer Energy in Rowan Park. The almost $200,000 for public art comes from donations because of that vision plan. And ultimately, we're looking for the county to step up and say, out of the excess money that they have, that they want to spend some of that money outside of the city of Muskegon. We're asking them to spend some of that money in Muskegon Heights. Be part of the renaissance of Muskegon Heights. Be part of that downtown vision that we have begun here in Muskegon Heights. That is what we're asking, and that is all possible because of a vision. And it will be increasingly successful if we're able to, with one voice, go to our capital and say, we have to get rid of the debt at our school district. If you want us to have the maximum amount of effectiveness, if you want us to be able to move as quickly as possible, then we have to figure out a way with one voice to come together and say, no matter what happens with our school district, if they choose to go left or they choose to go right, we have to get rid of that $43.7 million worth of debt. And so I will end with today with that thought that, you know, with all the wonderful things that we have going on here in the city of Muskegon Heights, and believe me, it's not happening as fast as I would like to have it happen. I would like to have it happen yesterday, but we are gradually making those steps and money is coming in three times what our budget is. We're talking about close to $30 million worth of grant funding that's coming in hand over fist and will continue to come in because of our vision plan. But we're not going to be able to accelerate that unless we are able to come together with one voice, enemy, friend, what have you. We all understand, regardless of where you sit and what should happen with the school district, that that $43.7 million needs to go away. I would love to take you just half of that and begin to focus on using that money to pave our streets, because you put together new houses with paving, along with industrial parks that are attracting water usage, along with new businesses in our downtown, and the destination of our downtown park and the destination of Mona Lake Park, as well as the use of the green space in the other parks. And we've got the whole trifecta all there, ready to go. And that's where we're moving with Muskegon Heights. And that's what I talk about when I say reaching new heights. That's what the mayor's talking about when he says reaching new heights. That's what the council is talking about when they say reaching new heights. That is reaching new heights. And I will wrap that up as Troy Bell, the city manager, city of Muskegon Heights, where you get to know what you need to know so you'll be in the know. Thanks and continue to be blessed. Have a great day.